Well, I'm hoping for a different direction coming up for Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. Please, nothing creepy. Still processing those last couple of hours. So glad we've done it. Hope we can help here in this murder investigation we were talking about. If you're catching the show later on, then go back and listen to it in Streamlink. You won't regret it, but it's tough. And I would say, you know, let's go in a direction here that would put a smile on our face, but I don't even want to be thinking about smiley faces at this point. So I'll leave it up to you. Where are you going to take us coming up in just a moment? Before we do, I just want to say again, it won't be something that I hit on a lot, but I just wanted to apologize as I did earlier in the show. I won't go into the detail that I did, but I offered some reflection on last Saturday night and my sincere regret that I was as adversarial as I was. There was a reason, not good enough, but a reason. And I made the offer to Steve Quayle. I hope he takes me up on it, comes back on the show sometime soon. I hope that's okay and that we can move on, because I'd really like to see where else you're going to go with the show next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so still getting over the heebie-jeebies east of the Rockies. It's Jim in Rapid City, South Dakota on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, where are you going to take us?
Well, I'm really sorry to do this to you, but in approximately 1995, for maybe 3 months during the spring, we had 8 accidental drownings of Native Americans all within like a block area of our creek. And our police department blew it off as accidents, and we never really heard nothing about it. The Native American community was pretty sure that it had something to do with skinheads and Nazis. And when I heard the subject of the show tonight, I just, my skin just started getting creepy crawlies, and because,
fair enough,
you know, all these years, you know, they've never talked about it,
right?
Never paid any attention to it. Yep. And a lot of people think, you know, because of the, there's a, probably a little bit of racial tension here in Rapid.
Sure.
We thought that maybe had something to do with, you know, it not being investigated, but
right.
It's been going on at least 13 years that I know of then.
You know, I mean, we were wondering about that earlier, you know, whether it would have been different if these disappearances had all been women,
right?
How much faster there might have been an investigation, or whether people might be more willing to tie them all together. And on top of that, I think the question also comes down to if the victims, and we're talking about a story you can link up to at coasttocoastam.com. It's a story of an investigation that's going on into what might be called the smiley face killers. That the thought is, if these guys weren't drunk.
Well, see, that's the thing with these people. There was a bar that was approximately half a mile up the road.
Right.
And a lot of these people would drink there, walk down through this parking lot of a grocery store, maybe stop at the liquor store, grab another bottle, and then sit by the creek and drink. Well, they were just blowing it off as people who had too much to drink and sat too close to the creek.
And it may be. But again, it comes down to, it's interesting how when alcohol is involved, perhaps it colors the way we look at whether somebody was, a victim was asking for it in a way. And maybe that's
defenseless.
Just... or defenseless, but I mean, in the sense that cops, it's like a little bit like those teen slasher movies where it's always the kids who are drunk and having sex in the car, which are the first victims because it somehow seems okay or something, or that this is supposed to happen. And I just wonder whether in that own twisted way, maybe that's why some law enforcement may not have investigated it as much and just thought, you know, there's a bunch of drunks. And that may be what they're taking advantage of, if there really is this smiley face gang. Interesting that Jim should mention again the Nazi cult idea, the skinhead idea. That, like Christy Peel, the TV investigator last hour, said, the two retired police detectives from New York have cataloged several symbols that have been tagged in spray paint at what they believe are the scenes of the crime, and they've only released the smiley face and the word Cincinnati. But what else might there be? And could it be a swastika? Could it be another hate symbol? I don't know. First time caller line, Aaron and Joe, two people together in Sheraton, Wyoming. Is that right?
That is right, Ian. How are you tonight?
Good. You guys doing a radio show together?
Well, in a way, I guess.
Well, you're doing this one anyway. So where are you going to take us?
Well, it has to do with bringing a smile to your face, but not in that creepy way that you guys have been talking about. It's more in a fun way. We had put together a website, and it deals with intergalactic extreme sports.
Intergalactic extreme sports. Explain.
Well, we put together a website that goes into talking about golfing on the moon, sand surfing on Mars.
Right. Did I get something from you all in the mail?
You did.
Okay, good. Well, then it saves me the trouble of having to do the plug for you. Go ahead and plug your website.
Well, I appreciate that. It's found at www.ootwo.com. That stands for Out of This World Outfitters.
Okay, and you can go there and you can get a certificate for golfing on Mars?
Golfing on the moon?
Golfing on the moon.
Ice fishing on Europa?
Okay.
Mountaineering on Mars, hunting on Mars, and sand surfing on Mars.
And go ahead and give the website address one more time.
It's www.ootwo.com.
Okay, good luck with that, guys, and thanks for sending that. I got a smile in the mail earlier this week when I opened it up. Wildcard line, Heath is in Maryland on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines. Heath, where are you going to take us?
Good morning, Ian. I was going to rant about oil, but I guess that's going to be sort of an old story. So on a brighter note, I was wondering whether you're going to start taking applications for the Coast to Coast Survival Cooperative.
The Coast to Coast Survival Cooperative. Yeah. Well, I mean, we should all be in there for whether it's 4 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever. We should all be prepared. That's kind of funny. Thanks, Heath. John is in Tulsa on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Thanks for the Slade. You know, remember the intro music that you played? But the Colliding Galaxies that is on Hubble website, you know, the photographs that are downloadable.
Uh-huh.
Well, is that... I mean, I don't have a question, but Linda Moulton Howe was speaking of new crop circles that had appeared in the vicinity of Stonehenge,
mm-hmm.
which is right in the exact galactic proximity of the huge galactic events that are taking place. I think she said it was like 85 different photographs of activity out there in nebulous space, you know, where we all come from, et cetera. So,
by the way, maybe, you're talking about the Slade. Did you mean Sweet at the top of the hour? Is that what you were talking about?
Oh, that wasn't Slade?
No, it was Sweet. Fox on the Run. I could see why you'd make that mistake, though. I could see.
It was, the vocalarity was similar.
Yeah.
But anyway, this notwithstanding all the other information about the Hubble space thing and those crop circles, it all seems so interrelated, you know what I'm saying? So
it's interesting thought. I appreciate that. Linda Moulton Howe was great the other night. By the way, on the website right now, too, there's a very interesting story. It just got refreshed and updated, so if you haven't refreshed your screen, you should. There's a story about Bigfoot encounters at coasttocoastam.com, and I'm going to read you the copy here. Many Central Californians are convinced they've had a brush with a Bigfoot. Cell phone salesman Bill Compton regularly searches for the elusive creature in the Sequoia National Forest, where he has seen, quote, beasts walk away from him on two legs that look like giant hairy animals. Ron Good of the North Fork Band of Mono Indians has not seen a Bigfoot, but thinks he smelled one that has been following after him. Accountant Susan Larson believes she heard a Bigfoot outside of her window one night. The scream, quote, was so scary that you would no way in your right mind go out that door and go looking for it. There's more on that story, and you can link up to that at our webpage. It's very interesting, though, and I'm grateful that Lex put that up there tonight. Dennis is hanging on Coast to Coast AM. Dennis?
Hey, Ian.
Hi, open lines. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I just wanted to give you a little update here. We just had a little bit of a shaker up here in Northern California.
Did you?
Apparently, it was a 4.9 earthquake centered somewhere around the little town of Verde, which is just about 8 or 9 miles west of Reno. And I'm over in Grass Valley area, and I felt it, and some friends of mine felt it, and it happened about 11:40, so less than, about 40 minutes ago.
How about that? And not strong enough to knock, you know, frames off walls, but just enough for you to hear the glass rattle or a large truck going by?
Not even really that much. It's just okay. I was sitting in my chair listening to the show, and all of a sudden the chair just kind of, you know, felt like somebody was kind of moving it or something, and it wasn't, you know, anything real obvious. I'm sure it was probably felt a lot more over in the Reno area and Verde. We're about we're probably about 60, 70 miles west of Verde. So,
well, that'll get your attention, won't it? Suddenly,
yeah.
The chair starts vibrating like that. We'll see we'll see if other people reported in. And thanks for the heads up on that. Don is in Salem, Oregon. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Don, where are you going to take us?
Oh, how you doing, Ian? This is probably kind of off the track here, bud, but I'm a disabled Vietnam veteran, and I'm worried about these guys and girls coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. When they get discharged from the military, they have to go through the Veterans Administration to prove that they, you know, where they were injured. They have to get, witnesses, how and when and all that stuff. And I've been dealing with Social Security for 7 years, and I've been denied my fourth time here about 2 weeks ago. But, everybody says, you know, well, thank you for your service. But I would really appreciate you or Art or George to have a show where the veterans can come in and, you know, explain what's exactly going on and, let the American public understand what we go through. And I'm not going to whine and snivel about it, but I just figured I'd throw that out there and maybe see what the American public feels about this. And I'll hang up and listen to you.
All right. Well, I'll just tell you on the phone or off that I think the American public is 100% square behind the men and women who are coming back from Iraq. I think, by and large, I don't know who doesn't. I think Americans want to make sure that those coming back from service in Iraq or in Afghanistan or any place where they may, you know, need some time to decompress will be getting the help they need to make the transition. I think it's very scary. The number of stories I've seen about families in peril because dad or mom couldn't get the mental health care they needed. I don't know one person that would object to, you know, or not even be aware of just how bad it can be. So sorry it's happening to you. Know that this show completely stands with veterans, regardless of the sentiments about the actual conflict itself or about Vietnam for that matter, that, you know, just because you don't like the war doesn't mean you shouldn't love on the warriors. And that's where I think American compassion and budgets should be reprioritized, and we shouldn't be inviting tragedies back here by not giving people the care that they need. So, yeah, a show someday, I don't know about that, but I'll pass it along to the producers and, you know, at least in the meantime, that our hearts are with you. Wildcard line, Robert is in Rhode Island on Coast to Coast AM for open lines. Robert?
You're the man. I got to tell you how much I appreciate the commitment you guys have to this show. And it was totally illustrated last week when you and Mr. Quayle were butting heads. I'm clear that you had an intention, and I'm clear that Mr. Quayle was passionate. passionate about what he was trying to get out, and I really appreciate you taking responsibility for that and, you know, apologizing tonight.
Good. Well, he deserved that, and I hope you heard the sincerity in my voice for where that kind of thing hooks me. And I was, if I had had a little more warning, I might have processed it better. But yeah, I get
hey, bottom line, we're all humans, and I really have
thank you
so much more respect. I always had respect for you guys, and I really appreciate what you did. I was calling to see as far as wild card topics was concerned, when and if you guys could do some updates on Alternative 3 and
Alternative what? Alternative what?
Alternative 3. I've been rereading my 1979 copy of the book Alternative 3, which came out shortly after a British television show did an article about the brain drain that was going on in Great Britain that led them to discover this program called Alternative 3. In the past, you've had guests on that have referenced it.
Yeah.
I figure with all these, you know, most recent cases of people disappearing, that popped back into my head.
Yeah, that's a really interesting route. That's an interesting connection. I hadn't made it. And, in fact, I hadn't even heard that term in a while. It took me a moment there to catch back on again. Yeah, I'd love to do that. I can't quite put it together yet. It doesn't snap together like Lego pieces yet, but I'd be willing to take a look at that. I have a feeling that you're going to be hearing a lot more about this story we were talking about earlier that's on the webpage. I just wonder whether with all of the people who are calling in saying, hey, this happened here, and it happened in a sequence of time, like it's happened in these other college towns, and it happened with a connection to some local symbolism. I wonder whether you're not going to see an explosion of stories that might be looking for some sort of interface with this. It might parallel it. It may not be connected, but I we'll find out more next week, and you know we'll be tracking the story arc of that on Coast to Coast AM. Tom is in Missouri. And Tom, it's wild. It's open lines. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I'm Tom Revelle from Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Oh, Tom, sorry about the last name. Tom from Cape Girardeau.
Yeah.
And I was flipping through. I have a lot of websites that are like weird news, and I come across this news story from like way up in the Ukraine or something like that about micro spaceships that are on like the nanite scale, and they were like through some guy's blood or something like that, and they found these little itty-bitty, like, spaceships. And I was like, okay, so only our human arrogance would dictate that, you know, everything has to be our size or bigger, so why couldn't, like, invading or helpful aliens be smaller than us? And well, they could be flying around us all the time, and we'd never see them because we'd go, oh, that's a fly, get out of the way, you know?
Yeah, I think, too, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the movie Fantastic Voyage. Remember that? About the mini-sub that sunk down to a atomic level and then inserted into a guy's body. Yeah, I'll have to take a look for it. What was the website where you found that story?
I've got a whole bunch of them saved, so I'm not sure which one it was on. It was,
okay.
I think it might have been Weird Wide World News or something like that. But
I'll take a look for it, and I'll take a look for it, and I'll see if I can't find that before the end of the show. It's open lines. We'll give you all the numbers. Love to have you be a part of it. Where are you going to take us? Here's your chance coming up on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Well, I'll be honest with you. Usually when I'm filling in, especially for George on open lines, the night just flies by, and just suddenly look up and it's like, oh, we're halfway through the last hour. There's something about the topics tonight have just kind of been so troublesome that it has slowed time down for me. So I look forward to you cranking it up next with open lines from now till, well, maybe we'll stay on a little extra late longer tonight on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Remember, tomorrow night we'll continue a conversation we've been having off and on over the years with John Abramson, Overdosed America. There's some startling news. Well, it may be not so startling if you've been following the story as long as we have, but yet more evidence of corner cutting on the part of the pharmaceutical companies could have direct implications for all of us. We'll be listening tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM for John Abramson picking up that thread. Where are you going to take us? We'll start with Cedric in Illinois on Coast to Coast AM. Cedric?
Hi, Ian.
Open lines.
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Hey, great to talk with you.
Thank you, too.
I'm from Menominee, Illinois.
I know Menominee.
You, Illinois?
Sure. I'm actually an Illini. I graduated from the University of Illinois.
Oh, and that's it borders Cincinnati, Wisconsin.
Cincinnati?
Well, it's Cincinnati, but I've been told, too, it could be pronounced Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. And very interesting.
There's a Cincinnati mound next to me. Well, I could bicycle there.
And, really?
And East Dubuque is, from what I understand, is where the incident occurred. But I'm not here to talk about anything grim, because this area is so beautiful. It's carved by the Mississippi River.
Sure.
And East Dubuque used to be Dunleith. And from what I understand, Al Capone used to have an apartment there.
Oh, that's not surprising.
Because the river was convenient for taking the alcohol up and down.
Sure.
And there's tunnels underneath the East Dubuque Main Street.
Cool.
Going from building to building.
Cool.
And it used to be like, used for gambling purposes and whatever.
But, well, it was probably originally built for some practical purpose, like the distribution of coal or something. But
it was watering hole for miners.
Okay, well, there you go then. Something like that.
Even before
then, it gets
then,
adapted. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Exactly. But even before then, on top of the hills, on the bluffs, there's mounds, Indian burial mounds from the Mississippi. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous.
Go ahead. Good luck. Better luck than there you go.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. I do know that area a little bit, and I love those Indian mounds, those Native American burial grounds. I love that they're all over the country, of course. You know, I mean, they have them in different states, and they all look very similar. And they look sort of pyramidal in some cases, and it just goes to show you some of the synchronicity of these Native American tribes that may not have actually been in contact with each other. You mentioned the Al Capone connection. I'll echo that by saying I live here in the Twin Cities, and in St. Paul was like the vacation headquarters for most of the notorious gangs and or individual bank robbers of the 1920s and 30s. They'd worked out a deal, the local police had, that if you come here, hang up your guns, don't commit any crimes, we won't give you up and we won't track you down. And so there's a book, actually, it's called John Dillinger Slept Here, and it's a catalog of all of the different places where people like, you know, the Ma Barker gang and what, Babyface Nelson, George Babyface Nelson, and some of these other guys, including John Dillinger and Al Capone, had places. And I have a copy of this book. When I first got it, I drove around and I was just looking at so many of these apartment buildings still exist. And you can actually rent the actual apartments where some of these people stayed summer after summer or year after year when they weren't out robbing banks across the country. TJ is in Southern Minnesota, actually, on Coast to Coast AM. TJ, open lines. Where are you going to take us?
Hey, Ian. I'm only 80 miles south of you, so I want to say quickly, this weather is just not working.
It is. But at least you're just getting rain, right?
Typical Minnesota.
Yeah, but you're getting cold rain. You're not getting the snow that they're getting up in the northern half of the state.
You guys got a couple inches coming from what I hear up there.
That's what I keep hearing. I keep looking out my window, and I haven't seen it yet, but I keep looking at the radar, and it doesn't look good.
Yeah, see, I got a comment and then a question.
Okay.
My comment is I just caught part of that last military guy a couple callers ago. I just caught part of that, and I've got to back him up on – I'm a Marine Corps war veteran. We got nothing when we come back here.
Yeah.
We as a country have to support these men and women.
Yeah, it seems weird from this administration, too, that they've been so particularly harsh, it seems like, in their edicts to the Pentagon in cost cutting.
Yes, sir. We've got to step that up. I mean, it's pathetic. I'm a vet, and there is not an option for anybody.
No.
However, my question takes us back to your guest.
Go ahead.
There wasn't a whole lot of information given out. However, there was more than enough to have, if anybody in this group that's doing this ridiculous crap,
right,
if they understand they've already been labeled and they already know the information's out there, even if we're not giving it over the radio, they're going to change their MO. I mean, are you worried? Are you not worried about saying too much in a case like that to where it changes and it makes it a lot harder for the authorities to follow their leads? I mean,
here you go. Here's the point. I think it's a really good question, but it's a paradox, because the reason why these two former New York police detectives have come to the media with this is because the local authorities are refusing to budge off their original conclusions that these guys were all accidental drowning victims. They are not investigating.
In the long run, they can get more information that way.
Well, they're just not investigating. They made it very clear they're not going to investigate. So their point in going to the media is, in fact, to create public awareness, attention, and perhaps even pressure for these police departments to think outside of the box that they're in and to reconsider whether or not it might be a gang.
And that is a catch-22.
Yeah, what do you do with that?
At the same time you do that, you get more information, but you're allowing them to know you've got the information so they can change your pattern.
Well, that's true, too. But
that's 22.
But isn't everything in life a trade-off? You know, you got it.
To what extent do you draw the line?
It's a great moral or ethical question. I think if they had any evidence that these guys would change their MO or that they wouldn't just rather keep playing the game, if they are in fact this smiley face gang, that they might be interested in just seeing the police continue to blow them off. And maybe that's part of the taunting of this, is that they know that they're safe from the regular authorities and that these two retired police detectives can only do so much. They don't have indictment powers. So, you know, who knows? Maybe what they'll do is keep doing exactly what they've been doing and keep tweaking the nose of the police officers who say they don't exist. But a fair point, always a good question, worthy of consideration. Let's go to Russ, west of the Rockies in Oregon, on Coast to Coast AM. Russ?
Yeah, good evening, Ian. I've got about two or three turns in the road for you. One thing about those guys who are getting drowned, I wonder if someone's not drugging them or something, if they aren't fighting or anything. And then,
well, they're pretty drunk to begin with. So,
yeah, so they might give them, like, you know, there's a lot of these drugs like Xanax,
right,
and all kinds of junk like that in bars.
Yeah, but that's true. I think they have looked into the possibility of whether or not these guys had roofies or something dropped in their drink and then tracked afterward.
Yeah,
and I haven't heard whether or not there's a conclusion to that.
I was sort of thinking that's why I just sort of be thinking, well, just another guy drunk or stoned in the river or whatever. I think about those earthquakes in down in Reno, and that's pretty close to Tahoe. You know, and usually earthquakes, when they swarm and build, it's usually like a sign of volcanism or volcanoes.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if someone shouldn't monitor that lake up in Tahoe, because if that, like, turned over, that lake with a bunch of poisonous gas on the bottom of it or something, it could be really bad for a bunch of people.
I imagine so, sure.
But there's a thought there. But another thing to say, I've been kidnapped myself. My brother was shot, and I was shot full holes. He died in my arms.
Wait, when did this happen?
16 hours in the ocean in Hawaii. What?
Eddie, when did this happen?
Oh, back in 85.
How old were you?
I was about 28. We got taken about 12 miles out off.
Okay.
About 8 miles off.
You can't swear, Eddie, so you got to be careful with that. So I hope they blip that. You can't swear.
Oh,
careful.
Excuse me.
So did I hope they got that back at the studio. Okay, that's all right, Eddie. Now, so you and your brother, you were in Hawaii. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a little shop, and he is a landscaper, and he got in a tussle with his girlfriend he's going to marry. She is having an affair with this guy on a boat, this captain, and so they broke up, and this captain came and kidnapped me and him, took shot in a boat about 8 miles off South Dakota off Captain Cook Point, and then shot us, gut shot him, and shot me through the chest, blew my left arm in half, and I jumped off the boat, and they got me through the buttocks, my testicles, my legs, and then I towed him for like 3 hours till he died, and then I continued to swim about 10 miles that night to get, because I just swam sort of north, northeast to get back to Kona.
Aren't
so
those
I got
fairly...
back, and we caught him, and the FBI caught him, and but the captain that drove the boat, supplied the gun, hires the guys to kidnap us, got misdemeanor assault. And so I was awarded the highest amount in history in 1985 for misdemeanor assault, $250,000, which I've never seen even a penny of, not even a roll of pennies. But,
Eddie, tell me about swimming off the coast of Hawaii with bullet holes. I would have thought that was like total hammerhead shark area.
Yeah, they left us in the shark lane because the point goes off south of town. And so there's a ridge that goes underwater, goes about 2 miles deep, the water, mile and a half, 2 miles deep. And, but there's a ridge, a deep water ridge, and it wells up the currents there. And, it, you know, so the sharks feed there.
How do
but
they not
get you? But you basically keep moving. You never stop. Because if you stop, then you make a pool of blood, and they just swim through it until their nose hits something soft. They eat it. You know, they're sort of like the garbage disposal.
Yeah, yeah. But with all of that blood from four bullet holes and your brother taking a gut shot, and again, I'm sorry about that. I'm grateful, but it's somehow shocked that the sharks didn't come for you.
Yeah, well, I kept moving. I swam like about 10 miles that night. I mean, I swam only about a mile till he died. He died after about 3 hours, about 9:30 that night.
Ugh.
But, man, I had to keep going. I mean, I swam long, because the currents, like, heading south got away from the islands on the last island. Got to keep heading north. And so
yeah.
Don't want to go that, don't go the wrong way. So I just swam my backside off the whole night and got till, by about, and the dolphins, after my brother died, the dolphins swam around me all night till about 5:45 that morning. When I was about 4 miles out by about 5:45 that morning, I had a watch on and stuff, a waterproof watch.
Well, Eddie, I appreciate you telling me that. I'm sorry it happened, and that's just dang interesting. And thanks for sharing that. I'll be thinking about that on Coast to Coast AM for a while. Where are we going to go from this? How about let's go to Joy in Arizona on Coast to Coast AM. Joy?
Yes. Hi, Ian. It's very wonderful to speak with you. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Okay, I would like to change the focus of what lots of folks are talking about tonight, and my focus is how we can get to peace on the planet.
Okay.
And there is absolutely a way to do it.
Okay.
Are you interested? I hope.
Of course.
Okay.
Does it involve alcohol?
No.
Okay, then that's a new way for a lot of folks. So go ahead, let's try your way.
It's in what?
No, that's okay. What's your way?
But actually, that's one of the comparisons. Okay, well, there is a plant, a very holy and a sacred plant. It's being lied about. It's completely forbidden. It is a teacher of peace, and it is a giver of profound and multifaceted abundance in all kinds of ways. It's some of the best food on the planet, some of the best fuel, biomass fuel. Here's all this biomass talk, and we're not allowed to talk about this plant. Insane. Some of the best fiber, some of the best medicine, healing medicine. Raises people's spirits, gets people thinking, oh, I feel well, and so you will.
Can I lock in my answer? I want to lock in my answer as hemp for $500.
Exactly.
Am I correct?
Okay. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
I'm all for this.
The whole plant, and stopping the war, this very overt war against enormously helpful and beneficial plants and the generally peace-oriented people who tend to want to utilize these plants. And there are ways. And one of the ways that I have thought of, and see, most of the people, like probably 75-80% of the people who are listening to this already knew that it was going to be the cannabis plant, because people know that it really is that beneficial a plant. And it's being worked.
But there's a difference between cannabis and hemp, right?
Yes, there is. Well, okay. Cannabis is the whole thing. That's the whole, all the different varieties of it. Yes, there's the hemp aspect of it. There's many different ways that this plant can be grown and utilized. So many different ways. And when we get back to utilizing this plant and recognizing its magnificent abilities to feed us, to clothe us, to house us, to fuel us, and to heal us, and to teach us about peace. And so I believe that one of the reasons that the U.S. government cannot, in its mind, cannot say that it can just come out and say, oh, sorry, we made a mistake, even though everybody knows that it's a major mistake to have this horrendous war. And the benefit would be so great. So amnesty, one of the things is...
Running out of time here, Joy, and you're not running out of breath. So
yeah, I know.
give me a final thought on this, because I'm just coming up to the top of the hour.
But think of it as not cattle, not cattle, C-A-T-T-L-E, cattle, C-C-C-A-T-A-L-L. We know that cattle is enormously destructive to the planet, to the animals, to the earth, to the humans who ingest it. It's very difficult. Instead of that, a compassionate campaign for cannabis awareness, truth, amnesty, legalization, laughter, and love.
Okay. Well stated. Amnesty. Let me just say, I agree completely. I think you're preaching to the hemp choir. The pot aspect of it may catch other people in a different place, but I fully agree in terms of biofuel, all renewable plant source for all sorts of different things that can be used for feed. Hemp is some pretty magical stuff in terms of its durability, and the founding fathers knew well what kind of a golden crop it was. So I'm with you 100%. We also know that the reason why the government is always against hemp is they're afraid that it would mask the production and or consumption of actual pot. And they don't want to make it harder for investigators to track those people that are growing fields of pot, you know, because it's really hard when you get to a state like Kentucky, which is like, what is it, 20% of the crops or something like that, marijuana. But anyway, I agree with you completely. And I think it'd be like saying people shouldn't have vinegar because they're afraid it would mask the production of illegal wine or some such. So, yeah, agreed. Go hemp, however we can do that sometime in the future. I think it'd be great. Coming up in our last hour, then, it's Coast to Coast AM. Where are you going to take us? We'll find out next. And let me also give you a heads up on a website I put up last week, and I've really been grateful for the number of people who have hit on it. And I've passed along some very interesting contributions. It's something I'm doing for a project in my other work, and it's called prayersoftruth.com, the Angry Prayer Project, prayersoftruth.com. Log on to it, take a look. I think you might find it interesting. And keep an eye out, too, on what's coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.